personal views and opinions expressed by our podcast guests are their own and are not legal advice or official statements by their organizations. Hello, my name is Debbie Reynolds. They call me the Data Diva. This is the Data Diva Talks Privacy Podcast, where we discuss data privacy issues with industry leaders around the world with information that businesses need to know now. I have a special guest on the show. This is Alexandra Ross. She is the Senior Director, Senior Data Protection, Use, and Ethics Counsel at Autodesk. Welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, Debbie.
That's a lot of big hats. We have to talk about this. So.
I know. My title's a bit of a mouthful, and I'm happy to explain what it is I do.
Yeah. I would love for you to talk about your career trajectory and how you ended up wearing so many hats in this field in privacy.
Sure. So I'll start with my current role at Autodesk. So I am the director of a department within our legal team. We call ourselves Data Legal, and I and my team support our privacy, security, and data ethics program. So the global scope of data essentially at the company. And we are providing strategic governance and legal support for the operational programs themselves. I've been at Autodesk now about 7.5 years. And prior to that, I worked as a consultant. Prior to that, I was privacy counsel at Walmart, based in the Bay Area at the Walmart.com, the internet division. And then prior to that, I started out at a law firm called Thielen Reed & Priest as an intellectual property attorney. So I started out originally doing intellectual property licensing and trademark and a little bit of privacy, and then got more and more interested in privacy. And as the privacy realm increased and there were more and more opportunities for lawyers, I just saw that as a great niche for me to enter into.
Well, you caught my attention. You and I collaborate with Lourdes Taracha at the Rise of Privacy Tech, and you're one of the you're an innovator evangelist there. So I know I see a lot of her postings and stuff, and you caught my attention, and I was like, why don't I know this lady? We got to talk.
I appreciate you reaching out, Debbie. I really enjoy your podcast and all that you do. And let me tell you a little bit about the Rise of Privacy Tech, because I think it's a really interesting project that Lourdes has undertaken. What she's trying to do and what this group is trying to do is put some more attention onto the privacy tech ecosystem. So vendors, tools, solutions that are helping companies manage compliance, find value out of the data they collect, and find ways to bring experts in the field, the companies themselves, the startups that are looking for funding or for advice on how to sort of get started, as well as the investors themselves. So there are sort of three tracks or three ways to get involved in the Rise of Privacy Tech. I've been involved now for about 1.5 years. Working with startups in advisory roles and working with Lourdes and some of her colleagues on putting together white papers and other materials to help people in the privacy world, people like us that are privacy professionals, whether they're attorneys or advocates or academics, learn a little bit more about what is on offer from a privacy vendor perspective.
Yeah, Lourdes is doing tremendous work. I love what she's doing, because I think a lot of times when people think about privacy, they think about the legal and regulatory part of it. They don't really think about the tools. You know, the operational side, unfortunately, doesn't get enough attention, I feel like. And she is smart enough to be able to pull all those pieces together and then throw investors in there as well. So I think it's a brilliant move on her part to be able to try to wrangle all these different people. I would love your thoughts about the technology and the legal part of privacy. So obviously in your role, you traverse all different areas within your organization. That includes people who are working in operations and strategy, the legal, regulatory, compliance folks, you know, the privacy engineering people. So how do you manage that relationship? Because I don't think it's a natural relationship. You know, you have to kind of work at it because, you know, everyone, you know, I feel like, you know, there are a lot of people, okay, I'm legal, I grew up in this legal bucket, you know, I'm technology, I grew up in this technology bucket, and it's hard for those two to gel and mesh together. So it really takes a special person to be able to traverse kind of those two big groups. What do you think?
It's a great question. And I think it's what I find interesting about being in-house counsel, being within an organization and supporting the operations functions. I think the legal analysis, you know, tracking the regulations, doing the legal analysis and counsel part is one part of my job. But as you've pointed out, a lot of the work is interfacing with different operations teams, you know, that are actually running the program. So I support a wide range of programs. You know, I work with our security team and our CISO on things that are related to protecting the data that we are stewards for our customers and our employees. So incident response, you know, threat and response programs, all the things that are strategic in terms of the security program. And what I found in particular with the security and privacy operations folks is they have a desire to understand the legal underpinnings of what it is they need to do, so that when you're speaking with them, it's always helpful to put some context around the legal requirements. You know, there's a legal requirement X, or customers are asking for certification Y. Where does that come from? You know, what's the sort of philosophy or emotional component behind that? And I think if you work from that perspective of the why are we doing this, you can really have a baseline of your relationship with your operational teams and help speak their language in terms of functional requirements. Because if you just go with a list of legal requirements with no sort of context or no basic understanding about how your organization actually operates, I'm not an engineer. I have a technical expertise that I have has all been on the job learning and talking to colleagues. I actually have a theater background. So I come from like the other end of the spectrum in terms of, you know, the sciences or the humanities. But I have tried to bridge that gap just by being really curious and asking a lot of questions when I talk to the engineers or when I talk to the product managers. I talk to the data scientists. I want to understand what they're trying to accomplish, what business goals they're trying to achieve, and that I bring to them the legal analysis, but I try to frame it in a business context, and I try to make it as practical and as understandable as possible.
Well, you're obviously succeeding at this. How do you get champions within the organization that are in different areas to champion privacy? So someone that you can turn, you know, how do you find the people that you can turn to in these different groups that you know that, let's say, for instance, like a new product or feature comes up and they'll be able to say, this is something I think we need to pull in Alexandria about. How do you do that?
There's a couple of different touch points. So we actually have a champions program across our company where we've identified particular individuals within various, you know, business teams, product teams, and so forth. And they are called privacy and security champions, and they're a cohort. It's sort of an additional, it's not their full-time job. They are, you know, engineers or product managers or whatever, but they're also tapped by their teams to be the privacy and security champions. And we give them specific training, they have meetings, and they are responsible for helping us complete privacy impact assessments or meet particular controls and requirements that we've established as part of our program. So that's one way that we get that sort of groundswell of support by identifying particular individuals within each product or business unit that's actually processing data. The other way that we try to find some touch points is with our legal colleagues. So the team that I manage, we are the subject matter experts in privacy, security, data use, compliance, but we interface on a daily basis with employment attorneys, with marketing attorneys, with product attorneys, with compliance attorneys, with litigation attorneys. And we are both providing them information through playbooks and trainings and escalation paths, but also engaging with them to understand what are the types of issues that they're coming across and how can we help them solve their employment initiative and help them support our people team, but also help them flag what are privacy or data use issues. And we'd like to empower them as much as possible. And then they can come to us if needed, if you know a playbook or a process doesn't answer their questions. And then finally, we have a lot of executive support. So there's governance committees that I sit on, and our general counsel and our C-staff are very invested in privacy and security compliance. And we, like other companies, have branded that as trust. So we have organizations within the company and departments within the company that are invested in trust. And that comprises privacy, security, data use, and resiliency and availability and other things that are customer facing. And we feel that it's really important not only to be compliant with what the laws and regulations require, but also meet our customer expectations and be seen as a leader with privacy and security and a company that our customers trust and that adds value when they do business with us.
You pushed on a couple of really great points I would love to get your thoughts about. And this is the trust. So trust is part of your brand. Trust to me is not about reacting, because I think customers expect if you have something bad happen, you're going to react, right? So that's not like a special sauce type of thing. But, you know, companies that can step out at the forefront and say, we're thinking about these issues in proactive ways. We're building these programs and we're thinking about them, not just reactive, but proactive ways. I think it definitely helps. You know, definitely your brand reputation outside, but I mean, I can tell that you all are really forward thinking in terms of the organizations that I've seen about this issue, about how central trust is to your bottom line. You know, I think it enriches the organization internally as well. What are your thoughts?
I think that's right. And it's not an original concept. There's a lot of progressive companies that are talking about data trust and being customer focused and making sure that they are not only doing what's required by the law, but potentially going above and beyond to meet customer expectations. It's something that customers expect. That customers are more and more sophisticated now. They hear, you know, the horrible stories in the news about companies or governments that aren't doing the right thing with their data. And I think people have a higher expectation about what companies are going to do with their data, how transparent they are, and also what sort of value you get from disclosing your data to a particular company. So that's definitely part of our culture. You know, their culture and values that are important to Autodesk in terms of integrity and being a customer company. So, you know, we're starting on the journey, and we hope to do more and more external messaging about trust and communicate more to our customers about what it is that we're doing so that we can meet them where they are, give them the information that they need to feel confident in doing business with us.
And I want to talk a little bit about your roles or your multiple hats that you wear. I think it's fascinating, partially because I just personally, I think if you heard any of my podcasts, you know I say this a lot. My favorite lawyers to talk to are lawyers who are in-house and at tech firms, because I feel like you get such a rich experience of different, you know, not only technology and techniques and different people, but also, you know, you have to understand the business, right? You have to understand the business that you're doing, which, you know, their business isn't legal, right? Your business is technology and it's people and software and stuff like that. So I think it's fascinating, you know, with your roles, the way that Autodesk has, you know, are thinking about these areas and putting people in leadership positions that way. And I'm sure when you went to law school, you probably wouldn't imagine that you were on this type of path, right?
Yeah. No, I mean, when I went to law school, there was not a privacy course. I took a lot of intellectual property classes and I may have taken like a cybersecurity class, but the privacy experience that I've gained over the years has been on the job or getting certifications and various things. Now there are whole, you know, departments at universities where you can, you know, get more exposure to privacy concepts as a lawyer. But no, when I first started out in law school, I went to UC Hastings in San Francisco. I thought I was going to be an IP litigator. And then I found this thing called transactional work and licensing and trademark work. And that's what I ended up doing in my first few jobs at the law firm. And it was only when I started working in-house that I realized that there was this emerging domain called, you know, privacy. And a lot of the people early on were former IP attorneys that found a way to sort of migrate over to privacy. Now you see a wide range of people coming into privacy. They're coming from a technical background. They're engineers or data scientists, and they go to law school and become privacy attorneys, or they become privacy program managers and so forth. So, you know, I agree with you. I never would have known this is where I was going to end up when I went to law school. I thought originally I was going to be a litigator. And then I thought, oh, I'm going to be a trademark and licensing attorney. And then I thought, oh, there's this thing called privacy, and this is pretty interesting. And this whole data technology was really fascinating to me. And I saw it as a growth potential. And I've been able to, throughout my career, find different opportunities within various companies to expand my scope and continue learning, because that's what I really appreciate about my job. The fact that I'm not pigeonholed into one particular area of the law. I love all of the teams that I support, and it's fun to be able to go from having a meeting about data use and ethics and AI to a meeting with our privacy program managers about consent and permissions or California regulations. And then I have a meeting with someone about a security project, and that variety is what keeps me going. And it also helps me because I see different aspects throughout the company and I have this broader view, and I can take the learnings that I have from one area and bring it into another.
Well, you've certainly succeeded at that, and you're a shining light and an example for a lot of people who are trying to find paths into privacy. You know, you're an example of what people can do if you are someone who enjoys learning and new opportunities and things like that. So I think we're only going to see more people from even different walks of life to move into privacy, because I feel like anyone in a data job that has data anywhere, you know, can benefit from learning about privacy. One thing I would love to your thoughts about, and this is one of I'm going to talk about ESG, right? Environmental, social, and corporate governance. So ESG, in my view, is a acronym that now has a life of its own. Like, you see it in the news now, and I think, you know, Elon Musk even tweets about it. I think he doesn't like it or something. But I think, you know, I would love for you to talk about ESG and how it relates to privacy, because I feel like it's kind of, I don't know, it's a term almost like the cloud. Like, it exists out there. People talk about it a lot, but they don't really describe, you know, what it means and how it's important and how, you know, organizations attack this problem. But there is a connection, though, I feel, between privacy and ESG. But I want your thoughts on that.
Yeah, sure. So ESG stands for environmental social governance, as you said, and it's a concept that's been around, you know, for several years. And it stems, I think, from two different places. One is compliance and reporting obligations for public companies to say, this is what we're doing in these particular areas, especially around corporate governance or in your financial disclosures. And then the other is connecting with stakeholders and customers and explaining what it is that the company stands for, you know, what they're doing from a sustainability perspective. How they're working on diversity programs for their employee population. And in the governance realm, that's where the privacy and security fit in. And what we've seen in the past couple of years is this idea of corporate governance expanding to include how companies are treating your data. So not just, you know, corporate governance, like the traditional model of corporate governance, but a larger framing of governance in terms of what are your privacy and security and data use programs look like. And we're starting to see more and more regulations that are requiring companies to disclose what it is that they do from a privacy and security perspective. There's some draft SEC disclosure requirements, for example, around cybersecurity. I wouldn't be surprised if we saw something similar related to privacy. The way that I've been involved in ESG programs at the companies that I support, we have a group that manages our ESG program and puts out impact reports. We complete, you know, surveys that rank companies based on their disclosures around ESG topics. And I'm part of a steering committee, and we meet and think strategically about what are the different components within the ESG, within this ESG framing that we think is appropriate for Autodesk, and where does privacy and security fit in? So I meet with a group of stakeholders, you know, people representing different parts of the company, and think about what's the appropriate discussion that we want to have externally with customers and our shareholders about what we're doing in these particular areas. And you can look at our last impact report and you can see a lot of great things that we're doing with sustainability, with employee diversity, and we're starting to say more and more things publicly about privacy and security. So for me, it's an outgrowth of what I've already been doing in terms of supporting the programs. And now we're thinking about ways to be more public facing about it and fit it into that ESG framework.
That's great. Thank you for that. Thank you for that. What is happening in the world right now in privacy that's concerning you most? So, yeah.
Well, I'd say two things. And, you know, they're things that I'm just tracking as a privacy professional because they impact the work that I do at Autodesk and, you know, the teams that I support. So one of them is federal privacy law and whether we will actually get U.S. federal privacy law this year and what's going to happen with preemption and private right of action. You know, I think they're are a lot of different opinions out there about whether this is the one that's going to happen. I think the fact that Senator Cantwell isn't supportive of this latest proposal doesn't bode well. I'd say as a privacy practitioner and talking to my peers at other companies, you know, companies want to do the right thing. We want to be compliant with laws. And it's very, very challenging when there are multiple laws and multiple jurisdictions that are not consistent and are not interoperable. So I would say the more consistency we can find, you know, in my personal opinion, this is not an Autodesk opinion necessarily, but I support a federal privacy law. But I think there needs to be a way that the federal privacy law is what companies are working towards, rather than having to also deal with all the complexities of state law. So I would prefer to see federal preemption rather than, you know, having a federal privacy law and the handful of state laws, because I just think that makes the compliance burden on companies. And ultimately, I don't think that's beneficial to individuals and customers of those companies. So tracking the legislation, you know, in the US, and then also what's happening in Europe. So a lot of the digital regulatory schemes that are coming out, the Data Governance Act, the Data Act, the AI Act, the Digital Markets Act, the Digital Services Act. I mean, there's a whole range of regulatory proposals, some of which have been enacted and some of which are still being debated. You know, I'm tracking those very closely. Luckily, we have a wonderful government affairs and public policy team at Autodesk that I rely heavily on that's tracking these as well. So how are those European regulations going to impact global companies like Autodesk? Where are the things that we need to be looking out for? And how is that going to impact the compliance programs that we already have in place?
Yeah, that is, I guess I support, I think we should have some type of federal privacy legislation. I just think we're in a tangle right now about preemption. The tang is complicated. It's complicated because for a number of reasons. One is, in my view, because this law is being proposed as a consumer law, and like human laws are broader than that. So states, if they pass human laws, the federal government couldn't preempt those. So I think it would be, I think it's complicated, because I think if, for example, let's say we had a federal law that came out before the CCPA came out, we probably wouldn't even be talking about preemption right now. But that's because right. So many states pass laws and they're like, hey, we have these rights and we don't want to curtail the rights that people have already been enjoying for all these years. And then say we have a federal law, then what if the federal law never gets updated? And then the states are going to go, you know, I think it's going to prompt states to want to pass different laws that aren't covered by the FTC. I think people don't realize the FTC doesn't cover all types of industries. So there are definitely some gaps that I think that unfortunately some states, it will embolden them to pass these other types of laws, which will make us worse. It'll become even more complex.
It's true. And I'm based in California, and I support California as a progressive state. You know, we are always on the forefront of progressive legislation. And so while I value what CCPA and CPRA are trying to do, I think at the end of the day, the federal law is going to apply to all citizens in all states. And I think it's actually a fairly strong protection. So there's a balance, right? If you're giving certain things up that you may have gotten used to under California law, are you gaining more by virtue of the federal privacy law? Yeah. We'll see. We'll see how it all gets sorted out, right? In Washington.
Yeah, we'll see. I'm not gonna hold my breath on this one because it is such a complex thing, and it's hard to do on such short notice, in my view. So I think, you know, I don't know. I feel like these things you almost have to do in layers over time. So it's hard to do a big, huge omnibus thing. Who knows? It may reach the finish line. We'll see. But I think it's just difficult to do it that way.
Yeah. One other thing that I'll mention that has nothing to do with legislation, but more has to do with people is, and we touched on this a little bit just in terms of, you know, our paths to the privacy field, is getting more and more people interested in privacy and finding opportunities for a diverse range of people to get into privacy and security. And how do we find ways to get more classes in colleges and universities? How do we expand the way that we're recruiting and find more, you know, diverse candidates, women, people of color? I feel really strongly about that. And I try to, you know, reach out to people. People contact me through various social media and want to talk about my journey and give them personal advice. So there are ways that I'm trying to find to give back to the younger generation or those people who are interested in getting into privacy, because we need people, right? We need people that are going to be privacy professionals, that are going to be security engineers, that are going to be privacy attorneys, because there's a lot of problems to solve. And we need more people that are interested and well educated and ready to come to work.
Yeah. It's a huge problem. I think it's only getting broader as we go forward. I think, you know, there needs to be more education about what's private and what's not, because I think a lot of the slow pace of privacy, either, you know, regulation or even having individuals be really passionate about privacy, to me, especially in the U.S., has come because I think people thought they had more rights than they have. So as we're seeing, you know, different things happen, you know, in the public and the press, you know, with different, you know, precedents being set by cases and things happening in the Supreme Court, I think there's a wake-up call moment for people about what's private and what's not, and what they need to not only fight for personally, but what they expect companies to do, which, you know, comes back to Autodesk and other companies. You know, what are people asking for now that they probably weren't asking for before? You know, what good questions are coming up with them now that maybe they hadn't thought about before?
Yeah, I think that's right. I think there's definitely an opportunity for data literacy or privacy literacy or whatever you call it, just to make sure that we all, as citizens of the world, understand what our rights are and what some of the risks are, and, you know, how to engage with companies. You know, what are the things that you should be looking out for when you're reading terms of service and all those things? And I agree with you. I think some of what's happened in the United States with the Supreme Court has really driven home how, you know, personal information and our sort of bodily autonomy and privacy are very important. And, you know, what could be taken away if we're not sort of being mindful.
What bit of advice that you can give someone listening to this who is, you know, maybe they're in a different, maybe they're legal, maybe they're technical, and they want to wear a privacy hat. They're thinking about how to get involved in privacy. What is maybe one bit of advice you can give someone just starting out exploring privacy as a career choice?
Yeah, I mean, I think it probably depends where you are in, you know, if you're already working in an organization and you can engage with your privacy program or your legal department, I think they'd love to have an advocate or a champion that's willing to learn, whether it's an informal or formal mentoring or job shadowing type of relationship. I think if you're in school, you know, look for those dedicated classes or courses or certifications related to privacy and security. There's a lot of internships that are available with privacy advocacy groups and think tanks where, you know, you can get a job right out of school and have something on your resume that's going to be attractive to companies that are hiring either privacy attorneys or privacy professionals. So that's more than one recommendation, but those are a couple of things I would suggest to people that are interested in privacy is, you know, talk to people who are in the field and find ways that you can add value.
Yeah. I would also, I guess I'll throw two more in there. So one is reading, figuring out what's happening in the world around privacy and adding that to your, as a feather in your cap. Cause I think if you're someone who can keep up with the happenings or even anticipate, oh my God, a new iPhone came out with this feature. Oh, this is going to be a privacy concern. So you could be a go-to person in that regard. I think that would be helpful. And then also people who are kind of fledgling, starting their privacy career, you know, I say, you know,
find, maybe there's a small mom and pop shop around that needs help, you know, mm-hmm. volunteer to help them with their privacy policy, help them, you know, give them some, a bit of advice or some type of direction that, you know, so that, that those things couldn't hurt.
Yeah. And you prompted me to think of one other, you know, I have friends who have volunteered at organizations or with their school districts to review privacy issues that are impacting their families or their children. You know, they may or may not be privacy specialists by training, but they get wind of something that's happening and they maybe are concerned or want to help put something in place that's going to benefit that community, but also be mindful of privacy and security.
That's a good one. I know a lot of people who are parents that maybe they get a notice from school and they're like really upset about it. And then they that spurs them to get more involved with what's happening with their children's data, mm-hmm, for sure. Mm-hmm. So if we, what's the word I'm looking for? If we think about companies, I don't know. I think, in my view, a lot of times, especially when you bring in security, some companies think about like cybersecurity in reactive ways. And we know that, you know, privacy and cybersecurity aren't the same, but they have a symbiotic relationship. But I think companies need to be thinking proactively around privacy. It really isn't something that, oh, we did this bad thing and then we can fix it. You know, sometimes you can't fix a privacy problem that you created because, you know, that goes to someone's human right, right? So how do you, in corporations where sometimes companies are like, well, if I don't see an immediate problem, maybe I don't want to invest in the time or the talent or skills to think about privacy, you know, because we don't have like an immediate issue coming up. What are your thoughts about that?
It's challenging because I do think there are a lot of issues and problems to solve for. From a security standpoint, you know, the way that I've seen it done most effectively is to take a look at all the different risks that are relevant to your particular company and then try to rank them, you know, in some sort of priority. And you're not going to get everything done right away, but you can look at it through that lens of risk and impact and address the ones that are the highest impact, highest value first. And I agree, sort of not sort of sitting on your hands and being completely reactive. That's not a best practice, certainly. I mean, I think that's why we have threat and response teams that are looking and testing systems to try to find the ways that the hackers can get in and proactively address them, not waiting for the incident to happen, but sort of doing our own testing or relying on you know, third-party organizations or information sharing, you know, with law enforcement. So I think there are ways to both look at the risks and rank them in order of priority, and also be proactive and to make sure that you're using your resources as effectively as possible, because we all wish we had more resources to devote to things. And I think trying to make the case that resources are important because you can be proactive, and being proactive, you know, is oftentimes much better. You spend the money now and you're going to prevent something bad from happening that's going to cost you much more in the future. And it's not just a financial cost, it's a reputational cost, it's a cost to trust and all of that. So trying to make those arguments in order to get support for being proactive rather than reactive.
That's great. That's great executive advice. So I know everyone will love that. Rate your risk. And then also, sometimes I feel like companies, they go the other way. So instead of companies thinking, oh, let's be reactive, then they think, okay, this law came out and then every single thing applies to me. And then I'm here on fire and going crazy, where not all laws apply to everybody, you know. So you, like you said, you need to figure out what is the, first of all, do these regulations apply to you? What are your risks? You know, what type of data do you have? So you may have data that doesn't have that, you know, different types of data have different types of risk, and maybe all those risks are not articulated in the way you do business. So mm-hmm. I think companies really need to think about that before they go crazy.
Yeah, well, it also doesn't help. It doesn't help your own sort of mental health, and it doesn't help you to be effective if everything is a fire drill and everything is the same level of importance. You really have to pick your battles.
So if it were the world according to Alexandra and we did everything you said, what would be your wish for privacy anywhere in the world, whether it be regulation, technology, human stuff, anything?
Oh, gosh. Well, you know, I'm concerned about government surveillance and the use or misuse of certain technology by authoritarian and autocratic governments. So I think the more people can be aware of that tendency or be aware of what's happening in certain countries, that would be my wish, that we address that more head on and that we have more sort of a groundswell of indignation or resistance to that. Because I don't want to live in that kind of society. That's a sci-fi movie that I don't want to live in. So that would be my one of my wishes.
Yeah. Yeah, we definitely don't want the dystopian future of, you know, super surveillance and stuff like that. That's terrible. Yeah, I agree with that. Well, thank you so much for being on the show. You've been fantastic. I know that people really, really love this, especially those who are either trying to get into positions, maneuver, you know, their career, but then also you've given some really executive advice for people who are in roles and thinking about different ways to attack the privacy issue.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Talk to you soon. Thank you.